The London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine podcast. Thanks for downloading the January 2013 podcast from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Happy New Year. As we enter the cold winter months, another season is also upon us, the flu season. At the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, this gives us another opportunity to measure some of the trends associated with how influenza spreads throughout the UK population. Originally started after the flu pandemic of 2009, and now in its fourth year, the flu survey collects data directly from the general public via a short online questionnaire, rather than from hospitals or GPs reporting patient numbers. This is particularly important because many people with flu don't visit a doctor, so don't feature in traditional flu surveys. Doing the survey directly online also allows us to build up more accurate data in real time about how and where flu is spread and who's being affected the most. We'd love you to take part in the flu survey. No matter where you are in the UK, visit us at flusurvey.org.uk. In this podcast, we'll hear from Flu Survey's Professor John Edmonds.
We clearly wanted to know whether use of public transport was associated with you getting flu-like symptoms. Turned out it wasn't at all.
And Dr. Alma Adler.
The truth is, at the moment, we have absolutely no evidence of man flu.
And they'll be telling us everything you wanted to know about flu, but were too ill to ask.
So this is the main weekly survey, and if you're healthy and have no symptoms, it's got two questions. One is, have you had any of the following symptoms? And if you click no symptoms, which hopefully many people will say, the only other question is, on a scale of 0 to 100, how do you feel today? And if you don't have any symptoms, you just click that, submit, and that's all. If you do have some symptoms, then there's a few more questions. So let's say I have a fever.
Fever, chills, runny or blocked nose, sneezing, sore throat, cough, shortness of breath, headache, muscle or joint pain, chest pain, feeling tired or exhausted, malaise, loss of appetite, coloured sputum, phlegm, watery or bloodshot eyes, nausea, vomiting.
Questions about medication. Did you change your daily routine? And then we have the last question is, what do you think is causing your symptoms?
Oh, that's interesting.
And this is something that at the moment we haven't done a lot with, but we want to look at if there's differences in the way people answer this question. We've been exploring the whole man flu angle. And so this is one of the things we want to do, is look at if males and females may answer this slightly differently.
Well, let's explore that a little more.
What's
the truth of that then?
The truth is, at the moment, we have absolutely no evidence of man flu. Women tend to report slightly more symptoms, so they tend to higher incidence of symptoms. Although this is most likely due to the fact that the highest risk factor for getting flu is being around children, and women generally may be around children more often, so this could be linked to this. So then we thought, well, maybe men just experience it worse and feel worse when they have flu, and that's why we introduced this, we call it the man flu question. And so I can quickly show you the results from that. This is what's called a violin plot in a very sexist way. Blue is males and pink is females. And so we have healthy, and then we have, these are sort of cold-like symptoms. So they're people who are reporting symptoms, but it's not classically flu, yeah. And then these are people with ILI or influenza-like illness. And so you can see in males and females, there's really no difference.
So this is kind of, so a well male, his perceived wellness is almost exactly the same as a well female.
Correct.
And then that looks constant throughout if they're ill or not.
Yeah. There isn't a lot of actual confirmed flu out there at the moment, so maybe once there's more confirmed flu, these will change. But at the moment, there's absolutely no evidence for man flu. I'm really sorry to tell you that. We're probably going to be the least popular people in Britain, but...
Well, with the men you will be. Not with women.
Yes, actually.
Is there anything which has come out of the surveys which has genuinely surprised you at all?
I think the lack of association with public transport, there's absolutely zero. I mean, you know, we've looked at it in a number of different ways and there's really nothing there at all. You know, in the pandemic, there was a lot of concern. I remember the Royal College of Midwives putting out a press release advising women not to go by public transport. Based on what? You know, where's the evidence? Well, frankly, there was no evidence whatsoever that public transport was or wasn't a risk of catching flu. It might be a risk. And so we clearly wanted to know whether use of public transport was associated with you getting flu-like symptoms. Turned out it wasn't at all.
We have a question about this.
How much time did you spend on public transport yesterday? How many people did you have physical contact with yesterday? For example, a handshake or a kiss? What was the furthest distance from home that you travelled yesterday?
This is the public transport information from last year. So you've got the green line is people using public transport, the blue line is people not using public transport, and the red line is actual confirmed flu cases. And here you can see that there's absolutely no difference. So even during this peak in flu, so when there's flu and other viruses, there was absolutely no difference in people. In fact, people taking public transport actually had slightly lower levels, but not in any significant way.
If I was to make a guess as to the kinds of people who are going to be more affected, I would initially guess elderly people.
Really? Yeah. So the elderly actually have the lowest incidence of flu, and children have the highest incidence of flu-like symptoms. It's just that when the elderly get ill, they are much more likely to get the severe end of illness, but their actual levels of infection are the lowest.
So this is a weekly incidence for age, so the weeks that we have data from. And the red bar here is 0 to 18-year-olds, the green bar is 19 to 45, light blue is 46 to 65, and the dark blue is 65 and over. And you can see that quite distinctly, the 65-plus has the lowest incidence and highest in the 0 to 18-year-olds.
Is that also because they're being vaccinated first?
And it might also be that, again, one of the largest risk factors is being around children. So it might be suggested that perhaps older people aren't as much in contact with children.
The London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine podcast.
How many people are taking part in the survey this year so far?
So currently we have about 4,050 people.
Okay. That's very precise.
I checked it right before I came in.
And are they UK only?
Yes, we run the UK flu survey. There's flu surveys, I think there's 12 throughout Europe. And so our data is just from the UK, but we have access to data from all of the EU flu surveys so that we can look at trends across Europe and combine all our data for a much larger sample size as well.
And this big advantage that we now have is that we are asking exactly the same questions in these different European countries, and so we can compare our data with Europe very easily.
And is there anything there that you found?
Well, the big difference that strikes, you know, if you look across Europe is people's different propensity to go to the GP.
Without upsetting anyone, which is the most hypochondriac country in Europe?
The French. They are a bit more likely to go than we are. But the Belgians, actually. But I think it's because in Belgium, if you take a day off work, you have to have a doctor's note. And so you have to have seen a doctor. Now, there are a lot of doctors in Belgium, and they'll also come to your home and give you a sick note. So you see that really high proportion of people with flu-like symptoms in Belgium see a doctor.
How does the results affect policy?
Okay, in many ways. So clearly there's very relevant vaccine-related policy issues. We also have looked and can look at the effect of antivirals and whether they protect you at the individual level or they protect your family members. We are about the only survey that can record or does record absenteeism. How much does this cost the economy, kind of thing? Yeah, which is important then for how much you're going to invest in trying to prevent flu. And then the other major thing, which is very obvious from our results, is the role of children. And again, that's not obvious if you're not collecting data on everybody, you know, because maybe the elderly are more likely to go to the doctors if they're sick than say children. They just go just have a few days off school or whatever. And what you very obviously see from our results is the key role that children play in spreading these viruses around the community. And of course, what's happened, I don't know if you're familiar, but we've now made a policy change in the UK, and from next year onwards we're going to start vaccinating children against flu.
Can I add one point? And that is, when John was discussing absenteeism, our results are completely anonymous and there's no way of tracking who is absent. So, you know, you don't need to worry about that.
I was more concerned about the question about who you've kissed.
Yeah, I've had some questions about that as well.
each year there's an issue about whether the vaccine works, and because the manufacturers have to take a punt basically on what they think might come around next season, next flu season, a good 6 months earlier than the actual flu season. And, you know, they get it wrong sometimes, or they get it partially wrong and so on. You know. And it's not really them, it's their advice by WHO as to what strains to put in the vaccine.
Where do they get that advice from?
Australia. So what they do is they look at what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere, and they say, well, okay, that's probably what we might get in the Northern Hemisphere that, you know, the next season. But that's not always true, as you can imagine. And, you know, sometimes that match isn't so good, and we'd like to know whether it is or not, and so on and so forth. And we can get this straight away. We can get this really rapidly because we are recording people's, you know, people are letting us know whether they're ill or they're healthy every week or not, and we know whether they've been vaccinated or not. And so we can just track, you know, flu-like illness in those who've been vaccinated and those who've not. This graph shows these are matched individuals, whether they've been vaccinated or not, and they're matched on other epidemiologically relevant factors, so their age group and whether they live with children, which is a really important one. This then compares the incidence in these two groups. This is for last year, over the weekly incidence in these two groups. And you can see that the incidence in these two groups is identical. There's no difference in those who got vaccinated and those who didn't get vaccinated until right at the end of the season. Last year, there was a very small flu season, but it was right at the end in March. And you can see that right at the end in March, there's a difference between the vaccinated group and the unvaccinated group. So the incidence in the unvaccinated group goes up, and the incidence in the vaccinated group stays more or less the same.
You've talked about flu seasons a few times. Could you go into a little bit more detail about what that actually means?
Yeah, so that's the true flu season, yeah, when flu is actually around, although the flu season is generally, you know, that's another word for winter, basically, you know.
Is it that simple? Is it always the winter?
Except in the pandemic. So the last pandemic, the first wave that we had was in June and July, which was very unusual.
And is it always a different strain every year or every season?
No. There are three strains of flu. There's three groups, as it were, of flu, two of which are flu A, which is a bit confusing, and one which is flu B. And those gradually mutate. But sometimes you will get the same strain, or more or less the same strain, circulating from one year to the next. So, for instance, the pandemic was 2009-2010, and the year after that, 2010-2011, was the same strain as the pandemic strain.
That was Flu Surveys, Professor John Edmonds and Dr. Alma Adler of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Whether you're affected by flu this year or are fortunate enough to remain healthy, we'd love you to take part in the flu survey. No matter where you are in the UK, visit us at flusurvey.org.uk. And for each week that you take part, you'll be entered into a prize draw with the chance of winning a Google Nexus, a Kindle Fire, or a cuddly flu virus. Thanks for listening to this podcast from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and we hope that you remain flu-free.